Penguin Random House Audio presents The Art of Vanishing, a memoir of wanderlust. This is the author, Laura Smith. For PJ. 1. I have long been in the habit of passing by houses and wondering about the people who live inside. I grew up in a residential neighborhood in Washington, D.C., the kind where the homes are close together, and neighbors often wind up knowing more than they might like to. Before dinner, I would escape my house to walk our little white lap dog. The predictability of the ritual, setting the table, filling water glasses, the sight of my parents' briefcases in the hall, filled me with dread. A day had ended exactly as it had the day before, and it would end the exact same way the next day and possibly forever. This wasn't how I wanted my life to be. I imagined that when I grew up, I would live all over the world. I would be an explorer of the wilderness, an observer of animals, a connoisseur of cultures, a collector of the unfamiliar. I envisioned hastily packed suitcases, maps, binoculars, huts in the mountains, spare hotel rooms in dusty cities, jeeps tearing down muddy roads into the jungle. As I wandered the streets of my neighborhood, I was shopping for other possibilities, other lives lived in other houses. But those lives appeared to be exactly the same as mine. In well-lit dining rooms and kitchens, I saw other families setting the table, calling the children downstairs, washing their dishes in the sinks. Television screens illuminated family rooms where exhausted parents slumped on couches after a long day in the office. Children did their homework by the glow of Pottery Barn desk lamps. I imagined that after their parents went to sleep, when the loneliness of those quiet hours became too much to bear, they whispered to each other beneath their sheets. During the day, they roamed the perimeters of their neighborhoods on bicycles and were driven to soccer and piano practice. They learned about faraway places in textbooks and on the news, but it seemed as if there had never been anything but this. No other place than here. 30 years on, they would come back to houses like these and do the same things all over again. I wasn't sure what my mother did for a living, though I had memorized her job title because it sounded important, and I was proud that it might be. "She's a health policy analyst," I told a friend. "What does that mean?" the friend asked. "It means she saves lives," I said, feeling fairly confident that this wasn't true, except perhaps in an abstract sense. But I wanted it to be true. I wanted the stakes of daily life to be more exciting than desks, screens, and fluorescent lights. I passed by house after house, each one a nighttime domestic diorama. Homo sapiens suburbe. These people had nothing to do with the world of mystery, dark deeds, and wilderness that I was sure was out there somewhere. My house, if I had a house, would be different. It would be in the mountains, or the jungle, or maybe in the middle of a city. My children and I would eat ice cream before dinner and play freeze tag at night by the light of fireflies. We would have a menagerie of animals. If you stood outside our house at night, you would hear peals of laughter. You would see tickle wars and pillow fights in warm, glowing rooms. But then another thought struck me. What if the reason all these people lived the same lives was that this was the only way? As I grew older, the fantasy began to erode. Where would the money come from? Would I have a partner, someone to help me? Where would the jeep in the jungle take me, and for what purpose? Where would my children go to school? Would I even have children? When I was in my mid-20s, I heard a story about a young woman who had also dreamed of leading a life of adventure, and I could not get it out of my head. Her name was Barbara Newhall Follett. She was a child prodigy and had published an acclaimed novel at the age of 12. People called her a genius. A photograph was taken as she corrected her proofs with a quill, smiling proudly at someone to the left of the photographer. When she was 13, she left her parents and traveled the high seas with a hardened crew. Later that year, she published a memoir about the experience. She was deeply knowledgeable about botany, butterflies, and much of the natural world. She was an accomplished violinist and a talented poet, but above all, she was a writer. She had been writing short stories since the age of 5. "She's your kind of person," my friend Robert said when he pointed me to an article about her. I had led an ordinary childhood, and no one has ever accused me of being a genius. But Barbara and I shared a love of literature and the outdoors. There was something else, too. A certain temperamental similarity. A restlessness. Later, I began to wonder about Robert's true motivation for telling me about her. When she was almost exactly my age, she vanished without a trace. He knew I would want to find her. It happened on December 7th, 1939. The residents of Brookline, Massachusetts, were busily preparing for Christmas. Miss Ayer's shop on Beacon Street was selling Christmas wrapping paper, ribbons, and stationery. Hendry's offered ice cream sculpted in the shape of Santa Claus. The village flower shop was stocked full of poinsettias. And all around town, people were placing orders for turkeys at 19 cents a pound. As night set in, the temperature hovered around freezing, and the gas lamps flickered in the darkness. Families prepared for dinner in their clapboard houses on Walnut Street and their Victorian houses with trellised porches on Cypress Street. For some, the looming holidays brought a twinge of pain, their sadness cast in sharp relief against the holiday cheer. A 15-year-old boy ran away from school that day. A middle-aged woman didn't come home that night. 4 people reported their dogs missing, and a 22-year-old girl slit her wrists and then disappeared. On Kent Street, Barbara's marriage was coming to an end. The young couple's apartment was comfortable but modest, with a fireplace and a rounded row of windows overlooking the quiet street below. She was 25, fine-featured and tomboyish, with a long auburn bob. She hadn't planned on this kind of life. She hadn't planned on bickering about who would hang the curtains or what music to play at a dinner party. She had never intended to sit in an office all day, a large round clock ticking the minutes away. She hadn't planned on having a husband or a house. The Boston and Albany Railroad had a depot around the corner, and Black Falcon Station, with its enormous ships fastened in the harbors, was just 5 miles away. There were ways to escape from Brookline, to get out of a marriage, to alter the patterns of a life. Barbara gathered her notebook and $30. She walked out of the apartment, down the engraved wooden staircase, through the front door, and disappeared into the night. She was never seen or heard from again. The apartment was exactly as I had envisioned it. In a low-rise building with rounded turrets and a plain facade in a quiet neighborhood of small apartments and clapboard houses with a few shops and restaurants. A few houses down, an old man in a neatly pressed button-down shirt was mowing his lawn. Brookline is a town that seems to belong to another time, giving it a Halloween feel regardless of the season. There was a whiff of mystery, a sense that something more was going on behind those well-kempt exteriors. Or maybe I was reading into it because I knew something had happened in that building 75 years before. I was lurking in front of Barbara's building when a middle-aged Australian woman came out to put her trash in the dumpster. We started talking. I explained that this was the last place Barbara had been seen. "Would you like to come inside?" she asked. A few moments later, I stood in front of the large, curved living room windows, wondering if this very apartment had been Barbara's. Below the window, I could hear the man mowing his lawn. I wondered how many Saturdays, for how many years, he had done exactly that. The mechanical hum of the mower was oddly comforting. The woman's boxer, Harry, butted his snout against my legs while I answered her questions. "I was looking for Barbara," I said. I doubted I would find her, but I hoped to gather clues and learn more. I had reason to believe that she...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?